This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 160, 3D OBD. Welcome to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I'm joined today by my friend and co-host, Michael Rowe. How you doing, Michael?
Hey, Michael. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm thinking about 3D stuff. I'm thinking about cars. I'm thinking about all kinds of fun stuff. And let's just jump in and talk about them, shall we?
Woohoo!
All right.
We'll do it.
So first thing, and when I showed this to you, you're like, wait a minute, didn't we see this before? So head-up displays, you know, and again, not heads-up displays, but head-up displays have been around in the automotive biz for, I don't know, quite a while, right? And they are an expensive proposition. Typically, they're north of $1,000 to have that installed in a car where that's even an option. And yes. I happen to somehow stumble across a solution called Hudway Glass, so hudwayglass.com, which allows for head-up displays to be in really practically any car using nothing but a piece of reflective glass and your very own smartphone.
Yes.
And you said you saw this, right? So
yeah, I seem to remember maybe when this was a Kickstarter that you and I talked about this one a couple of years ago. And on top of that, one of the very, and I'm looking in my app directory, mm-hmm. one of the very first apps I ever bought on my iPhone was an app that did pretty much the exact thing that this site implies, mm-hmm. which basically on your mobile device screen,
right,
it shows a reverse
mirror image. Yeah, right, exactly.
That when you put it on the dash of your car, reflected up into your windshield. So it was doing the same thing, but these guys have basically made a piece of plastic with a piece of slightly polarized glass on it to do the same thing.
Right. Right. And you need both pieces, right? So your phone has to show a mirror image so that when it bounces off the glass and reflects back to you, you can actually read it and it doesn't say turn left when you should turn right, for example.
And so what's really interesting about these guys is really not the $50 piece of plastic, but the app. And the app is taking advantage of the accelerometer, the GPS, all the normal things that you would want on your phone, and just using the piece of plastic to reflect it up. So you look up instead of down.
Well, you look through. What I really love about this is that this is augmented reality. An HUD, a HUD, head-up display, is augmented reality. So it's not using a set of glasses or goggles or spectacles or pick your favorite other poison. It's transmitting an image on a screen that you're looking through in order to do what you're doing. In this case, you happen to be driving, navigating, recognizing where your turn is coming up, seeing what your speed is, etc. It's augmented reality.
Yeah, I mean it's providing you information in the viewfinder of your eyes that's relevant to the task that you're doing. So in that regard, yes. The only, and wow, I'm going to sound negative, and I don't mean this to sound negative, but the only thing I worry about looking at the design, is the car that they demo in it has a pretty flat dash.
Right.
The device that they put on the dash just sits on the dash. So there's no type of magnetic or glue or stickiness. And the phone just lays on top of the device. Again, it does not imply any type of adhesive or other behavior. Now, it could be that is a non-stick surface that it sits on. And the phone that's up there is up there with no case on it. So immediately my brain goes to, well, what if I have a case? Will it still stick in the same manner? And if you have any type of really fast acceleration or really fast deceleration or really sharp turns, I'm wondering how effective it is, because they're showing a video going really, really fast, mm-hmm. but on the screen you see the cars driving 28, 30 miles an hour.
Sure. So important point, safety first. I'm sure that those considerations are ones that probably have been addressed. I mean, there are things that you can do with, I used to have one of these plasticky, rubbery kind of pads that you put on your dash, and
they're the sticky pads that are not really adhesive.
Right.
They just have a tension strength or a tensile strength to hold something on it in place.
Yep. So certainly an issue that has to be dealt with, right? Because you don't want your expensive phone flying all over the cabin of your car. And you don't want this piece of glass coming at you because you've decelerated quickly. But the point that I'm on still is that this is an augmented reality example, and one that has been around for a while, but this particular version of it allows for a much less expensive proposition to just reverse the image on your phone's screen and then allow that to be easily seen within your field of view as you're driving. And where this leads me next is, okay, if this works for a car, you know, are there other examples that you could do this with? You know, say you are in a retail store environment, and in the retail store environment, you might put this up on your shopping cart. You know, there might be a place for you to put your phone on a shopping cart, and then you could have the shopping cart guide you to what you're trying to find in the retail environment, as an example. Could be some cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different use cases that you could develop around how do I present navigation type data. I'll have to try to find this link for the show notes, but there was a company that was doing, I believe it was a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo recently, about connected socks. And the socks were haptic based, and they would vibrate to give you directions while walking.
Oh, really? I'm wearing my Slack socks today. But
yeah.
So
as you're walking along, it would go tap, 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 tap on your right foot. Would you need to turn right?
Right.
And that way you wouldn't be able to really have ads on your socks. But in a head-up display, you could easily have ads and coupons that pop up.
Right.
For that store experience.
I'm tapping you on your calf to draw your attention to the thing that's at eye level next to you.
Yes. So the different height on your calf says, how far do I need to look up and down? If it's on your heel, you look down on the shelf. It's up on your top of your calf. I guess it depends on the length of your socks and the size of your calves.
Yeah. So
all really good design questions to work through, right?
Well, they are. You know, I was looking a little bit at the Braggy Dash. You and I were talking about this earlier this week. And these particular earbuds provide a number of different haptic and audio type feedback mechanisms to you so that you can do different things easily too, right? You know, you're swiping them forward to increase the volume. You can tap your cheek in order to activate the connection to your Bluetooth connected phone to get your digital assistant to do something for you. So interesting sort of things about the human machine interface and how different places are trying to solve them. So I love the connected socks comment. That's fun.
Yeah.
So thinking about connecting things,
yes.
You have an example of this already, and you actually lent it to me so I could try it. So every car built since, oh gosh, what, in the last 10 years, 20 years almost? I don't know.
Since 1996.
Thank you very much. Since 1996 has an OBD interface, an onboard.
An OBD2.
Well, OBD2, right, interface that allows you to just plug in a computer to interact with your onboard ship's computer in your car and for your car to say things like, hey, you know, my gasoline mix is running lean, or, hey, you know, it's been a while since my last checkup and I've thrown several error codes that require attention, or. And yep. just like the HUD example that we were talking about of adding capability to an existing car, what Ford has done is they have added something that they're calling a Smart Link accessory to provide new capabilities to an older car. So you could do things like connect your phone to your car and pull information from it, or do things like remote starting your car or unlocking your car via your companion app on your mobile device, even if the car didn't have those capabilities to begin with.
Yeah, I think this is brilliant by Ford, to be honest, right? So one of the dirty little secrets that you learn about the onboard diagnostic port is that even though it's a standard, the actual codes coming from the vehicle are not documented. And so if you buy a third-party one, you really need to do a lot of work to get all the codes relevant for all the different make models of cars. And so each of the different OBD2 port dongle providers will have different sets of cars that they support. Ford, by actually creating one of these devices and making it
their own
for cars in general, would be a great way to collect data about other vehicle manufacturers. But if, as the article says, they're making it for their cars, so mm-hmm. Ford and Lincoln, not quite Mercury yet, but Ford and Lincoln can provide a much deeper level of integration into the vehicle and what those codes are and what they can do with them.
Exactly. And Ford's had quite a good history of technology enablement in their vehicles. I've seen that too. I mean, I've experienced the easy entertainment system integration via Bluetooth in Ford cars that are going back quite a ways, of how simple and easy it was to just start up a podcast or playlist on my phone and continue playing it right from the spot that I left off when I get back in the car and start moving. And Ford and Microsoft have that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I used to go out of my way to rent the Ford cars with Ford Sync when I was traveling on business for that very reason. Ford Sync, if I remember correctly, is really built off the top of the Microsoft Sync platform.
Exactly, right.
Or it was at one time. And there was a time period where it was really, really good, and then it dropped and became a little bit difficult. I think they were transitioning to new technology and trying to, you know, do even more. And now with the advent of all these competing standards between CarPlay and Android Car or Google Play or whatever they call it, and QNX's version of it, and then the Microsoft Sync, et cetera, we're kind of in this other state again where we have lots of different things competing. And how do you know which one will work best for you?
Well, and you
so
won't.
Having a third party doing something through a dongle might just give you a lot of capability.
Exactly. And the fact that this has the ability here of providing a Wi-Fi hotspot for the devices that are in the car is also pretty slick. I mean, if the speed is decent and the costs for using data across this are decent, that now opens up a whole range of other connected car stuff that makes for a bigger difference for the passengers that are in the car that don't have a cellular connection for their devices.
Yeah, and I think Audi was the first, either Audi or Volvo were the first vehicle manufacturers that actually would provide a hotspot in the car by default.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do a data plan, and basically the idea was, instead of burning all your data off of your cell phone, have a hub on the car and make the car really a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot, as you say. But then again, you end up subscribing to yet another data plan. And at one time, I think I had 5 different data plans across all my devices in the house. So
yeah, at some point, it's too many.
It's a great way to have another monthly payment for another data plan.
Right. And you know, for in where the world is going, that becomes less and less crucial. Especially with our other devices being able to be providing their data and sharing their data with other devices too. But in the world that we're in right now, today in 2017, this kind of thing is still pretty slick. pretty slick.
Oh, no, very cool. I think this is a great idea by Ford. It will be interesting to see if this is really top to bottom theirs or if they're actually partnering with a third party.
Well, they are. I mean, the articles talking about Delphi Automotive and Verizon Telematics
I'm talking about the device itself. The device, Delphi, is a standard supplier for Ford, right?
Sure.
So that's not a big thing. I was thinking, you know, like somebody like OBD Link or some of these other third party providers who can then take that and provide this as a larger set of capability beyond just Ford and Lincoln.
Well, right. And there could be another set of value streams that come around this, too, because in the insurance marketplace, there are already devices that you can hook into the OBD2 port, such as what you get from Progressive Insurance, that monitor the way you drive and where you drive in order to create more individualized targeted insurance plans. That depending on the way you drive and how you drive and where you drive and when you drive, your insurance rates could be lower. There's value streams can come from this too.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the Progressive one's really interesting because that originally came out about 10 plus years ago.
Yep.
They had it wrapped up in patents, and those patents were declared don't get me on the technical term, but basically the patents had to open up or declared invalid or something like that. And the insurance industry as a whole tends to be a very slow follower.
Yes.
So as soon as those patents opened up, others started doing this type thing. And the really dirty little secret about this one, I love this, right? You start by selling it as, if you allow us to collect this data, you will get better rates. And what you can do at about 25% of the consumers for a specific company using it, you actually can flip the model and say, if you don't allow us to do that, you will pay more.
There you go.
So it's a very interesting carrot and stick approach. You start with a carrot to start the adoption,
right,
and very quickly you switch to a stick to beat the rest of them into using it.
or alternately, you can use the carrot model indefinitely by demonstrating that.
No, you can't.
If you decide you don't want it, you know, I mean, you're what you've just described is really a carrot and a bigger carrot, right? If you decide you don't want it, you don't get the discount.
No, because then they have enough critical data about all their drivers or a large enough set of drivers that they can change the actuarial tables. And they actually make it a penalty. So it's not a you get a benefit or a bigger benefit. It's no, you are now considered an outlier and the actuarial tables change and you are penalized.
Well, if you think too about what value you could derive from this kind of data, there's a whole range of places and spaces. Insurance is just one of them where something like this could be really, really valuable. And we just need to think of it before other people. So that's our challenge. We want to be first. All right. So last topic for today, and this one's a doozy and one that I can completely agree with. Article, Michael, you found around 3D TVs and predicting that they are doomed.
Doomed, I tell you, doomed. Well, it's interesting. Years ago, I bought my Blu-ray player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, just like when I first got my CD player years ago and DVD player, I had built up a catalog of content before buying the device to play the content.
Right.
And I paid extras because I got a 3D capable Blu-ray player, knowing that I didn't have a 3D capable TV yet, but maybe eventually I'd get one when they came down in price and were at critical mass for the market. And there were so many competing different standards on 3D for TVs, right? Glasses, non-glasses, polarized glasses, active shutter glasses, etc. And when you have that many standards and none of them really take off, it's probably because people just don't want the basic technology. And I remember CES the last couple of years, the number of 3D TVs the first year I was there, say 2013, first year I was there again for the and it was, I mean, they were everywhere. And then yep. the next year they got even better and cooler, and then they just kind of started petering out.
Well, so. I never was a fan. I don't like going to 3D movies. I find, good for you. but I find that the
if just they're a good 3D movie,
they always have the hey, let's show you how something is flying at your face, you know, kind of.
Oh
thing.
No! Good 3D movies just leverage 3D, and they don't post process it, right? So, oh God, what was that movie? Avatar. Yeah. Avatar was designed from the beginning, from the ground up, as a 3D movie.
Okay. So, but did they didn't do any like arrows or spears at you or something like that?
There might have been one or two, but those were, you know, bleh. I mean, it was just when you were in there. There's one scene in the movie, if you remember that movie.
I do.
Where they're like in the wooded area, and there's all these little like glowing seed pods floating mm-hmm. around them.
Yep.
Right. To me, they look like if you take a dandelion and blow the seeds off. Right. And it literally looked like you were just in the middle of this sea of those while you were watching the movie. It wasn't coming at you. It was just it immersed you in the story. And that's where 3D is good. But the problem with 3D TVs versus 3D movies, right, mm-hmm. is the viewing angle is crappy. So you yep. pretty much have to be the person sitting directly in front of the TV or maybe 10 degrees in either direction.
Yes.
And how many people have a TV that's big enough to do that for the entire household?
Yeah, nobody.
The glasses very rarely do well over other glasses.
True. And then they do that flickering thing.
That's a problem in the theater too.
And they do that flickering thing to kind of block out one side of the
other. That's active shutter versus polarized, right? So, I mean, there's multiple technologies. There was even ones where it was built into the TV itself. You didn't have to have any glasses, but those, the viewing angle was much, 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 much smaller.
Right.
And any of the glasses that you wear tend to reduce the visible light, right? So everything's darker, so you need to be in a much darker room, or you need to have a TV that's really blown out when it comes to brightness. So there's all these trade-offs that had to be done, and the theaters had gotten pretty good at making those trade-offs less
burdensome
of a problem. Yeah. Less of a problem. So
well, you know, and maybe I just didn't give it enough of a chance, but I just didn't like them. It just always felt like they had to have the gratuitous shots in there of something coming at you. There was always the angle issues, like you said, and there are portions of your viewing experience where you are looking at things from a peripheral perspective that disperse the illusion. And once that happens, you're kind of snapped back to reality a little bit. And as this article says, quite interestingly enough, is that there's an expectation, at least the author of this article, an expectation that as we see more VR, AR, that's what's going to be built into television harmonization with these other capabilities. And whether that turns into holographic TV or somehow a more immersive projection type system, or, you know, maybe we're going to have our own little personal holodecks in our living rooms. I don't know. But it's an interesting future to speculate on.
Yeah. No, I really think there's some cool stuff that could happen, but we're not there. We've tried yet again. 3D has yet again died on the vine. So, but maybe as you say, as we kind of started with augmented reality, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk about things like virtual reality, maybe that's where we'll fix 3D television. So I was actually talking to a guy that works in the southwest corner of the US in a town that ends in wood and begins with the name of a berry. I think it's called a holly.
Ah, heard about that place.
And we were discussing the possibility. discussing how would you make a virtual reality movie, right? Mm-hmm. So that from a viewing experience, you would be able to position your view of the movie in any position, right? So, because you become literally not just a 360 camera sitting in the middle of the action that you could then rotate around.
Right.
But you become a data point, a viewable data point as a participant watching the movie, and then you could rotate that and move it all around in 3D space to watch the movie. So you could watch the person who's killing the person, right, in a murder mystery. So you would know in advance, and then you figure out how the detective figures it out. Or you can look at it from their point of view, right? So just all these really interesting things that change the way that you tell the story.
Well, the really compelling model on all this, at least in my mind, is the concept of reactors from the cyberpunk genre, where there are actors that are recruited in to even act in components of a story, and they're the ones helping to tell the story live. So you might be watching A Tale of Two Cities, and your role in that might be an observer in the crowd, or you might be one of the principals, and you have a role to play, and you're acting your way through it. And depending on the observer and the observed and your relationship to them, you might be catching exactly the key things that are happening, or you might be missing them because you're gazing at some very interesting architectural element that happened to catch your attention as the timeline of the story is flowing by. So to me, entertainment and the whole concept of television, right, vision from far away and bringing people into it, to me feels like we are on the verge of really seeing some of this science fiction capability come to life. And that, to me, is going to be the real compelling pieces of where VR will make a big, big difference, and why you might want to wear the ski goggles and kind of wander around your living room a little bit versus having the augmented reality type of experience where you're having layers of data that are made available to you based on the perspective of what you're seeing and how you're engaging.
Yep. Wow. I agree. Interesting, cool stuff going on.
Very interesting, cool stuff going on. Well, team, this is bringing us here to another end of our time, and lots of neat things to think about from a augmented reality, virtual reality, automotive, video. I mean, what did we not hit today, right? Perspective.
Well, we didn't talk about Android. No.
Well, but I dream of electric sheep. So, you know.
Yes. Yes.
So please join us again right here. Same bat channel. It's your bat
same
time.
Same bat time. It's whatever time you listen to.
Whatever time you listen to, it is what it is. We look forward to engaging with you on all the usual places, and do drop us a line of some things that you're finding curious about how automotive and media and other technologies are evolving, and we'll talk about it here on gamesatwork.biz. See ya.
See ya.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz, or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.